Okay, I'm so excited. Tonight we have Roger and Troy from the Dark Knight of the Podcast on with us. Yay! Yeah.
Hey.
And I'm excited because they have, you know, there's this energy that just kind of radiates. They're so much fun. So check out their podcast, but also listen to this one all the way through. I know it's going to be a good time all the way through.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I was telling Troy that I've been like counting down to this evening because today was trying me on a new level that I'm not used to. And I was like, I just need a fucking bitch. I can swear on this, right? Like, I mean, come on. No, yes, of course I can.
Yes.
I was like, I need to. I need a bitch with my ladies is what I need. Like, I just need to like let my hair down, have a night in. So honestly, this sounds really appealing right now.
Good. Let it all out. This is a safe space.
Yes. Thank you. We appreciate it. And I'm so happy. Like, we had a brief encounter, brief but memorable, towards the tail end of the Houston Horror Film Festival. I'm so happy we got to have like a moment because it was actually a really great bit of conversation. And normally I like to consume conversations, but I was just sitting there like enjoying the convo going on with this small group of people that were all really interesting. I like that we got to share that moment. And you definitely stood out to me for sure.
Oh, thank you. So did you. Especially you all were talking about, okay, so what we're talking about to catch you up. Chantel, you had already left. And Carmela and I were still waiting for, she was with me while I was waiting for my ride in the lobby of the hotel. Now, we were at the Marriott, and this is after the Houston Horror Film Festival, where we had a blast the whole weekend. And so we were just all just chatting, and then they went into like how gay men, how they might not be in a relationship anymore, but they still have this sort of camaraderie. They still look out for each other. And so we just went into that conversation. It stood out to me because it was just fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And it conversations and events like that don't necessarily like need to go to deeper places, but that did touch on some really cool things. Like, that's so true. And Troy, I know that you have a situation with your ex where you like co-parent your dog.
I think that is what started the whole conversation, because I was saying I have to go pick up my dogs, and you got, and Carmilla was like, oh, who has your dogs? And I said, well, my ex has them. He's watching them while I'm here. And she was just floored with the idea that I was still that close of friends with an ex that I would, you know, let him watch the dogs. But I told her, you know, we got the dogs together when they were puppies, when we were still together. So we're still friends. I still hang out with them when I go to Houston. No hard feelings at all. So
yeah, that is wild. What stood out to me also, because I have a dog, my family, I have two kids and a husband, they went on a 2-week trip and I wouldn't go. I wasn't leaving my dog behind. If the dog can't go, I got to stay here. So I related to you saying that you would rather drive to and from Vegas to make sure your dogs are taken care of instead of leaving them behind. Are they doing okay? Because I know you said they were older.
They're good. They're good. The one's, she's laying right here on her dog bed, and the other one is right here on the floor next to me.
Oh, yeah. Chantel's got some fur babies, too. We all are fur baby parents.
Too many. Y'all.
How many do you have?
I have 3 dogs and 3 cats.
Oh, okay. Gosh,
that's like a little army. That's amazing, though. I mean, that sounds like heaven. I worked at a dog kennel for like a period of a year. It wasn't quite a kennel. It was like a higher end, like bougie dog kennel where you would put your dogs if like you were traveling or what have you. And it was honestly the most like joyful summer of my life because I was surrounded by animals at all times. And I think like having like that much camaraderie within your household must be really lovely.
Well, mostly I just have puppy chews everything all over the place. Yeah.
I would have more. I really would. I would have a house full of dogs if I could. I mean, I'm stretching it with this one because my husband kept saying no, and he came for years. He came home one day and this baby was here. It was like I want him. So but I would have more. I would have a house full.
Yeah. I have this lovely Vizsla over here. That's who you see wandering around in the background, laying on the unmade bed. But I just lost, I'm going to get emotional. A month and a half ago, I lost my 14-year-old miniature pincher, to cancer. I'm still not fucking over it. This is my partner's dog. He's lovely, but like I am still recovering. Like losing an animal is the single worst devastation one can experience. And to this day, I just find myself crying at random. So animals are wild. Pets are wild.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Roger.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, I get why you want your dog. They provide such amazing companionship, especially when maybe watching a horror movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I know my partner won't fucking watch them with me.
My dog, he'll look at the screen when I have something on, and if there's a loud noise or, you know, and then he'll just go right on back to his business. He'll look, and then he'll go back. And I was like, I really want you to just sit here and watch it with me. Like, you know, stay engaged.
Yes. I need you to know I need you to know who Sydney Prescott is. I need you to know who to bark for when it's exciting when someone comes on screen or when it's sad when someone dies. I don't know. I feel like my dog kind of gets it, but he just doesn't fucking care.
Okay, well, now, did we all watch Nope yet? That's the latest one that's out, right?
I haven't been able to. I know.
Oh, we can't talk about it then because we're going to spoil it.
I want to, but after we got back from that convention, I feel like my life has been disarray. Like, we had to record an episode back to back. We had to do, like, our Patreon episodes because we hadn't done any of them. We're like, oh, we'll do them at the convention. Fuck that. We had no time at all. And so we finally got our Patreons done, and then we had to do a full-length one. We're technically one behind right now, so it's been...
Yeah, we are one behind. But we recorded the one for next week last night. It ended up being 3 hours.
Oh, God.
So the editing process will begin on that. But we still have one that we have to do very soon to get it out this weekend. Because we're like 2 weeks out without releasing a new episode. So we're trying to milk the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4 for all it's worth.
Which ain't much.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? And y'all have a wealth of knowledge between the two of you that I really just want to go into. Okay, because Roger, I listened to you when you were moderating the Halloween panel, and Troy, I was in there for your panel when you were one of the speakers on the on filmmaking. You were talking about filmmaking, and y'all both are great on the fly too. But I also was thinking very knowledgeable. So y'all want to get into that, or you want to get into a movie?
I mean, I'm all for whatever, honestly. I like just loose rambling, to be honest. So this is like, we could like talk about that, I think, for sure. Because I know Troy and I kind of come from the same school of horror fan where we just fucking grew up with it, you know? I mean, Troy is a wealth of knowledge, but it's because that's been his life. Mm. I mean, that's defined. Every story Troy has told me has been tied to horror in some way, from his high school experiences when he's working at his Blockbuster Video and everything. Like, it's, you could tell Troy is somebody that grew up with a passion from a young age. Is that right, Troy?
Yes. Mm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Horror has definitely defined my life and also my life choices. Things that I've decided to pursue in my life all boil down to horror, whether it's filmmaking, the Houston Horror Film Festival, the podcast. It was always a huge dream of mine to start a podcast. And I'm going to vent here for a minute. I'm kind of pissed because I had the idea for Dark Knight of the podcast like years ago. Roger knows this. And, you know, I was like, oh, it's going to be cool. It'll be like a gay podcast with a gay tint to it. Well, things happened. I was filming movies and I just couldn't think about who could be a co-host that I would be really comfortable with. And me and Roger worked together on Teacher Shortage, and we got along really well. And I just kind of popped the question to him, like, hey, Roger, would you ever be interested in doing a podcast with me? He's like, oh my God, I've always wanted to do a horror podcast. But by the time we finally got around to doing it, there were already several gay horror podcast duos out there. And I'm like, fuck, I don't want people thinking we're copying, because I had this idea. You can, I had Dark Knight of the podcast domain name registered like 5 years ago. So a couple of the gays beat us to it, but I think we do just as good as they do, if not better, honestly. But
yeah, well, there's really nothing new. Like, you know, when you're creative, you're constantly thinking, how can I be new and fresh? And so when somebody else does something, it's like, oh, fuck, now I'm gonna look like a copycat. I think about that all the time when I'm writing something, but there's really nothing new anyway. So everybody's got a podcast now.
Oh, yeah. It's the key, you know, everybody, yeah, that you're 100% sure. Everyone has a podcast or starts a podcast. I don't know how many people I've seen that, oh, I'm starting a podcast. However, you know, it's just like anything. It takes a lot of work. So yeah. You see some of these podcasts get started and like after three episodes, you never hear from them again.
Right.
You know, I mean, the key is consistency and, you know, churning out the episodes and getting a fan base and working social media to get people interested in what you're doing. And I think that's, you know, something that at least so far me and Roger have been very successful and determined to do is to keep stick with this. And yeah. Goddamn, there's been weeks where I'm like, fuck, I don't want to record this again. It's four nights in a row. But we do it. We do it because we want to get the material out there. I love feedback that we get from listeners when they're like, oh my god, that episode you did on so was so fucking funny, blah. I just love that. I thrive on that. So
hey, yeah. Gentile and I talked about that too, because this is our fourth season. We did have to take a break in there just because, you know, life gets in the way and everything, but we're still going, you know, because there's a lot of them that they're gone. They started and they're gone, but we are still here, still rocking, still having fun, still talking shit, still laughing our asses off. And then, you know, getting a spot for media and press at the Horror Film Festival, which is just amazing. Like, that was the highlight of my year. I'm not even lying.
Yeah.
You know, I had more at the Houston Horror Fest than I did when we were media for Texas Frightmare.
That's a big one. That's a big one. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Texas Frightmare Weekend. The Texas Frightmare Weekend was the first horror convention I ever went to. And I will tell you, I think I mentioned this, one of the highlights of my filmmaking career, if you want to call it that, is when my film Stirring, aka Mrs. Claus, was selected to screen at Texas Frightmare Weekend back in 2017. And it got the midnight slot on Friday night. And for me, that was just like, amazing. Like, I could not believe it because it was the convention that I had always attended and strived to get a film in. They did not take my first film. I submitted my first film to them and they're like, fuck no. But Stirring, they accepted. And it was it really was, like I said, a highlight to watch my movie. And you know how big the screening rooms are at Texas Frightmare Weekend on a, you know, packed on a Friday night, and to hear applause and people gasping and laughing. And one of the best experiences of my life. But I do know, you know, Texas Frightmare Weekend, we're not trying to be competition. And I wish these other cons in Texas would get that through their heads, the people that are running them, because we've heard not just Texas Frightmare Weekend, but a few other ones that think we're trying to be competition. We're not. We actually would love to work with all of these cons and make Texas a destination for horror fans. But, you know, when you have people that are thinking, oh, well, they're competition, we're going to block them from Instagram, block them on Facebook, block them from here, not attend their event, not let them attend our event. That's just childish. Like, yeah. we're not trying to compete with you. We would never try to do that. We're trying to cultivate something for fans in Houston. So I just, it's kind of sad that, you know, other conventions look at new conventions as competition and not thinking about how you could work together to really, really bring something massive and awesome to horror fans.
Right, that's a good point. And also that should go across the board to creatives, period. Like, authors are not competing with authors, podcasts aren't competing with podcasts, musicians are, there's enough for all of us, you know. It's just more, you just have more to actually enjoy. Yeah.
First of all, Troy, girl had something to say. With that, like, I feel like this is a hot take episode with Troy Escamilla. Putting it all on the table, Texas. Let's get our shit together, Texas. Camaraderie. Come on. But I think there's something valuable to say across the board, arts-based or anything media-based. You are stronger when you work together as a unit than you are when you try to separate and isolate yourselves and play the whole better than card. Even like whenever I get to the top of whatever my pinnacle will be, I hope that I'm never that person who's like, oh no, I wouldn't do that. Like, no, I remember when I was given opportunities. I remember when I was asked to go on to shows or events that like excited the fuck out of me because I was green. I was learning. It was new. And you need to give that experience to the newbies as well. And whether it be letting them on your film sets and giving them exploration, room to explore and educate themselves there and work amongst people who know what they're doing, having them on your shows, you know, offering to read their script. Like, I think that's so valuable. And that's something that a lot of times that competitive nature can get in the way of that. And that prevents growth.
Yeah. I mean, I get a tinge of that sometimes, now that I think about it. It's I've been grinding on certain things for a long time, so sometimes I just don't want to see it, like, in my feed if it's, well, for me, it's more of, like, if I see people supporting somebody that came after me and they don't support what I'm doing, then sometimes I get really irritated by that, and it's like, well, I just don't want to see any of what y'all doing. Yeah. I don't want to see, because it makes me feel... I guess I come from feeling left out. So when anytime as an adult, if I feel left out, I get that same little feeling in my shoulders, the tension in my neck that I used to get. But yeah, overall, there is more, you know, the more we have to love, the better of anything that it is. Mm-hmm. I just really do wish that some of the people that, especially the ones that I've supported, would support back. But this is too serious of a conversation. We gotta have some.
No, we're getting in deep today. Hot takes.
We want to have some fun, though. Roger, we got to let loose.
My hair down. Yeah, but I will say that I appreciate that within minutes, we already were like, let's get deep. So now that we know we can get deep, let's see how fucking weird we can get, because there's a lot of potential.
Okay, I have something. Y'all said nothing was off limits, and so I have gay questions.
Oh, please.
Ooh. Okay. So, I wrote this book a few years ago, and I included a word in there, and that I would not include now, because I've only recently realized, okay, maybe it is an offensive word to include. And when I was talking to Chantel about it, because I identify as someone who enjoy gay men, okay, like I find them sexy and attractive. And I asked Chantel, do you think it's appropriate? Like, what do you call us now? I know what the word used to be, but I know you can't say in lover. You know what I mean? In lover. So F PEG would not be appropriate anymore either. So what is the terminology? What is the word to call those of us who are women who enjoy gay men?
I think the idea of having a term like that, kind of dissolved away, in the sense that I think there's been a lot more also like pro celebration of just women in general, both within the community and just women in general as a whole. We both realize we're all going through some kind of very targeted attacks right now. I think that's formed a lot of unity for us that support each other. So I hear women referred to in any term of endearance. It's always like, she's a fucking queen. She's a queen. I'm acknowledging that this woman is in a place of authority over me as a mere male. She is stronger than I am. She's more powerful than I am. And I prefer her over any man I could talk to. So, like, no, I mean, a queen, it's a term of endearment. Gays use it all the time. But it's not so much, like, I get what you're saying with the hag term. I feel like that kind of dissolved away. Do you agree, Troy?
I still heard it, but that was in Iowa, so. I mean...
Chantel mentioned that her friend said it was okay, and I was like, maybe for him, but I don't think
I mean, so I guarantee there are a sector of gay men that still say it. Oh, she's my, you know, faggot, yeah. Whatever. I know, I guarantee it. So, I mean, I guess it's one of those things where, like anything, some people are going to find it offensive, some people are not, and you just kind of have to find that balance, whatever feels right for you, the group of people that you're hanging around with. You got to kind of adjust your vocabulary and your demeanor based on who you're around. Like, if you know this person is going to be super sensitive about it, then maybe use a different term. But I know that gay men, and Roger, you will agree with this. And if you don't, you're lying. But I know that gay men very much still use the F word very liberally.
Oh,
all the time.
All the time. I mean, that I don't. really listen use it much, but if you
Roger, you're because our last episode of Dark Knight of the podcast,
I was like, say it.
You said what your greeting was, hello gay, what'd you say, hello,
I always say gays and ghouls. I never say, I don't think I really ever say hello.
Yes, you did.
Hello, faggots. Yes, sorry. You did. You gotta bleep it, bleep it. Did I really just enter already, without hello, faggots?
It's already out. It's already out. Somebody, Brett, you know, one of our listeners messaged me, and he thought it was hilarious that Roger started the podcast with hey, fags.
Good for me. Good. I'm happy. I didn't even know I fucking did it, but you know what? Progressive. I think it's progressive, and I think Troy's right. I think it's a thing. I mean, I'm sure you have terms that you use amongst your friends. We all do, you know. I mean, we say faggots often, and if it offends anybody, you know what? Channel it elsewhere.
I muted the N word, and I had like one of my friends on, and I just got way too comfortable one time when I was talking. It just came out. I was like, oh God, I got to take that out. I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. I don't usually say it, but it just flowed. I was like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
So I did go in and I put a sound over it, like beep or something. Yeah, I beeped it. That's it.
Okay.
I got a, Chantel, go ahead, because you know I run my mouth. I keep going. Go. You better get your word in.
I'm my computer so y'all can hear me. So y'all continue to talk.
Oh, come on. All right, well, raise your hand when you want to say something. That way I know to shut up for that minute. So I was telling a story once before where I had, you know, when you're a writer or at least someone who is like an experienced junkie, you have people that are willing to open up and let you into their lives, you know, for research purposes. They're good with that. They're like, yeah, you know, use me, get what you, the information you want from me. So I got invited to watch two men go at it once. And that was, you know, like one of the hottest things I have ever seen. Yeah.
I bet you it fucking was. Animalistic.
It was pretty amazing. Yeah. So here's the question. There is, let's say there's somebody that you know they're into men, okay? It's a man that you know he's into men, okay? But you don't know if he's also into women. What is a good way to approach that if you find him attractive?
I think that if you're somebody who's progressive-minded enough that you don't care if he's bi or you don't care how he identifies, you just want to pursue him for the person he is, I think there's something to be said for that to begin with. I think that if someone really does identify bisexual or, you know, somewhere on that spectrum, they're going to be like, wow, either way, I appreciate it. My partner's bisexual. He had only dated women up till me. It was a weird process learning that body language and know each other. But you know what? It fucking worked. At least, you know, 2.5 years in and things are great. So I'm happy I pushed that topic. But I think it's something like, I think you literally just go up to someone. You're like, hey, listen, I just want you to know, like, you got a good thing going on. And I, you know, with no disrespect, I just want you to know that. And if you're in a position that, you know, you're in, you maybe are possibly interested in me, a lady, let me know. And either way, he'll either say, you know what, yes, I am interested in pursuing a lady, or he's going to say, you know what, that is the most flattering thing I could possibly ever get. I'm buying you a cocktail. Like, and then you got a new friend, you know? So I think it just, be transparent. That's hot. Yeah. That is hot to me. Do you agree, Troy?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Those were my questions. Chantel, come on. Those are my questions on this subject. I got much, much more.
I just want to hear about you guys, y'all work in movies and stuff. So I kind of wanted to hear about all that with you guys.
Yeah. Troy, you lead this one. I talk a lot.
Oh, yeah. I have up until this point, I've made 3 feature films. They were all filmed within a course of 3 years. So one a year for 3 years in a row. But yeah, Party Night, Mrs. Claus, and Teacher Shortage. Roger is actually in Teacher Shortage, which is kind of how we met in person and kind of got to know each other, was having him in my film. But yeah, I got a really late start into the filmmaking arena. You know, I didn't grow up thinking I was ever going to make a movie. I like wasn't one of those kids that walked around and like film shit. I wasn't obsessed with filming stuff. And my whole background is as a writer, love to write. So I've written all the scripts for my films I've written. And long story short, I kind of got thrust into the director's chair of my first film. I had written the script. I was producing it. Me and my other producer did a crowdfunding for it. We successfully raised the funds for it. We hired a director that she suggested to me. And, you know, she was a really good friend of mine. So I went along with it. Flew him into Texas. We had our cast there. And about 3 days into the film filming process, we realized that he was not the right fit for the film. Just didn't work well with the cast. Didn't really have a grasp of my vision and just working well with the cinematographer to get the coverage needed for the shots. So, and then he did something and we just like, after 3 days we had to fire him, and it was a tough decision, but we sent him packing, sent him back to where he came from. And we're sitting there without a director. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Who's going to direct the film? And everyone was like, you are, you wrote it. You have the vision for what you want with the film. So I worked, luckily everyone on the film was very patient with me, and I learned a lot and realized, you know what, this is something I can do. You know, I am the one with the vision for this particular film. So I can definitely vocalize that vision to my actors, to my cinematographer, whatnot. So it was a learning experience. So I dove right in and did Mrs. Claus, sole director for that from start to finish, and then Teacher Shortage. So, I feel like I did a pretty decent job. They're not the best films, but I'm proud of what we accomplished with the budget and the amount of time that we were able to film in and just everything. I'm itching to get back into it, but I've had a couple scripts sitting around gathering dust here for the last couple of years, but the pandemic hit and that really put a damper on moving forward. But I'm hoping that Mrs. Claus 2 is going to come into fruition next year, finally. Awesome.
Is it going to be filmed in Vegas? Where is it going to be filmed?
No, I will not film it in Vegas. You know, I'm a teacher, so I have the immense benefit of having summers off. So all of my films are always filmed in June or July because I'm off. Mm-hmm. They were all filmed in Houston, but I will not film it here because it's not the right aesthetic.
Okay.
Yeah, Mrs. Claus takes place in the Midwest, so the aesthetic would not be correct. So I would probably either try to film it somewhere in the Midwest, maybe Texas, because I do have connections there, but definitely not Vegas, not because I don't love Vegas, but yeah, it's just the wrong aesthetic.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
You don't get more Midwest than Cleveland, Ohio, where I reside, at least for now. But yeah, Troy should definitely come to Cleveland. I'd give you houses. It's very Midwest. Yep. There will be snow, I assure you. So, yeah.
Troy, what do you teach?
Well, right now I am a strategist. So I got out of the classroom. I was a librarian for several years. I took a job in Vegas as a instructional strategist. So I will be working with teachers to help them develop their curriculum and help them supplement the curriculum and give them ideas for, you know, differentiating instruction in their classroom and things like that. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, Roger, what do you do filmmaking full time, and or what do you do?
So well, first of all, I work in insurance in my day job, let's be clear. I've been acting in independent films since I was 19. I'm now 36. So yeah, I've been doing it for a while. I started as an actor. I've worked on about 35 films at this point. I've directed. I've AD'd on an array of films, but my first feature that I directed was Rebirth, which is a Romero fan film. It's a George Romero fan film, very much stylized after kind of like Night of the Living Dead, but addressing present day social commentary, because that's what Romero specialized in. So talking about how a lot of the things from Night of the Living Dead have not changed. It's the exact same social climate, just kind of worse. Now more people get shit treatment. So it's just sad reality. Yeah. It gave us a lot of meat to chew on, literally, and, you know, and figuratively. So that was the first feature I worked on from a directorial standpoint. And then after that, I'm now moving forward with my sophomore feature, which is an LGBTQ+ themed slasher called Meat, M-E-A-T. Mm-hmm. And that meat, that goes a lot of ways with this movie, because these boys are meat.
Any cannibalism in there?
There's no cannibalism. It is a stone cold slasher. But the meat aspect is like beefcake. These boys are beefcake, you know? And they're just meat, and you can stab through them just like meat. And that's exactly kind of what I was going for with that. It's got kind of like a double entendre almost to it. I'm super passionate about it. I've never been so driven with a project before. It consumes all of my life, which is limited to begin with. But that's really like my focus right now. That's really where I'm trying to put all my energy is seeing that through. But I'm still acting in the meanwhile. I have a few projects coming up that are very exciting, but I'm almost feeling like too distracted from that, which kind of sucks, because that's like my main passion, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, I want you to know, when I came back and I heard stab it through like it's just meat, I'm like, this is an interesting conversation.
Yes.
I really want to know more about meat, but I know you're in the foundation phase of it. You probably can't say a whole lot.
Well, you know, I can say some things. Well, first of all, we have an Indiegogo, and it's like down to the final week. And we kind of just blindly launched it. We've actually seen more support than we anticipated. But what is helping us is what we're doing with any funds that we raise is we're filming the first 15 minutes of the movie. And that's going to be what really carries us through to getting the rest of our funding focused and secured from larger backers who want to see more from the film. And like, understandably, they want to see the actual film. Yeah. So we're filming the first 15 minutes of it in October. I'm really fucking excited. If anyone would like to donate in any way, our Indiegogo goes for another week. There's a lot of very gay items available. I have a great cast aligned. We really wanted it to be a diverse cast covering all spectrums of the rainbow, you know, and there's not just pretty gay men. You've got lesbians, you've got bisexual characters, you have trans characters, you have fluid characters, you have all different colors, you have all different sizes. Like, I wanted it to be a movie that told a lot of stories for a lot of people who feel underrepresented, you know?
Right, right. I love that. I'm going to look for the link then. I just backed Jeremy Summerall's movie. He's got one coming out in October. Well, I think they're starting to film in October. But anyway, I am legit trying to help. I want to be in, behind the scenes of TV and film so that I can learn more and all that. But I desperately want to see filmmakers make the projects they want to make. And so however I can help, that's what I try to do. Just because it's more to it than just big Hollywood stuff, you know?
That's all great and wonderful, but we want to know how much sex, and are you going to show penis? We want to see penis, for the love of God.
Listen, I feel so bad. My poor actors.
Like, why is that bitch got a mic now?
No, girl, like, good ass. No, like, I knew it was coming. I've been waiting for it. And I'm prepared. And, like, listen, I respect the fuck out of my cast. And I try so hard. I'm like, listen, I have to be respectful. I shouldn't ever like acknowledge that my cast is beautiful. I try to avoid saying anything. I just don't want to be creepy. But like, I would be wrong to say that my cast is not very attractive. And many of them are naked over the course of the movie.
Just to tell you, it's creepy that you think you're going to be creepy, because that means you're being creepy and you're secretly sniffing their hair or something.
I have a straight co-producer on the film who I like. I'm like, go communicate this. Like, I don't want to be the one to say it. So go, like, tell him to adjust his underwear. Like, you know, it's the things you're looking for as a gay man. But I want it to be as respectful as possible, because the overall film is extremely sexualized. And it's not just sexualized. I want to be clear. Like, there is, it's an awareness that in the average slasher, women are always throwing out their tweeps and their peeps for the boys, but how often do you get the opposite? So this, you don't see any of the women. All they wear is power suits, the women.
We worked Jeremy Summerall over. We're like, where are the dicks? Okay. The tits. Where are the dicks?
Lots of them. Just get ready. It's a barrage of penises.
Oh, awesome. Nice. Come with
now
it.
You're gonna get some backers.
Yeah. I'm talking about.
They're like this.
Make Absolutely. It rain.
My cast knows why I cast them. I mean, aside from their great talent, they're aware that I cast them also because they are all very beautiful people. So I thank you to all of them for just being so lovely inside and out.
Now, Jeremy told us when he does his sex scenes or whenever there's going to be tits everywhere, he really tries to close the whole, like, nobody's allowed but the people in that scene. Is that how you guys operate as well?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's massive conversation that goes on before a scene like that takes place. And if there is not conversation about it, then there is a problem. If it's coming down to the actual day of filming and has not been addressed and talked about, because people's comfort levels need to be respected. And there always needs to be a level of professionalism on set. But I mean, I also like to think that there's something that when you're working with different people, like if you've worked with somebody before and you're in a scenario like that, you're like, all right, you know what, man? You see me butt-ass naked 4 times now. Let's just get fucking done. Let's get it done. And, you know, and versus if you have someone coming onto your set you've never worked with, like, especially, like, there needs to be a severe focus on that, because you never want to ever assume anyone is ever going to operate a certain way or think a certain thing or be comfortable with a certain thing. You need to be very aware of everybody and how they're feeling. So, yeah, I think if there aren't conversations happening prior to, it's being done wrong.
Mm. Do y'all have sensitivity coordinators?
You know, I looked into that recently here in Cleveland, Ohio, and it got to the point where I looked up a few people I know who are like sex therapists. Like, they do that whole thing where they bring people in and they're like, find you in a romance. Like, what is that called? Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's people that are actually like sexual, like, healers, you know, like they help you find your inner sexuality. I was like, do I get somebody like this? Like, I don't really think there's like a person that I just reach out to and say, I need you to be my intimacy coordinator. How do you go about that, finding that? Do you want to do it? I just Skype you in. I'm like, all right, she's going to carry you guys through all of it.
They have created the actual job. Yeah. They have created positions for that. I found that very interesting. Yeah.
I mean, how does one get into that?
I mean, they have, well, basically from what I've been seeing anyway, is that it's people that's already in within the circles anyhow. But then they find out about the job posting. Like, they have trainings and everything, just like they have for screenwriting trainings. And then you got to be in a pool that they're going to pick from, though, you know?
I mean, I think if you are an actor or an actress, you know if you're going to do nude, if you're not going to do nude. And if you're going to do nude, you have to be prepared, right? I would think if it's like you're worried that they're going to get some sort of shock or some sort of, like, they're going to freak out. I mean, wouldn't we need somebody on set for, like, whenever you're chopping heads off and some murderers coming after you? I mean, you know what I mean? Where do we say, hey, this is also traumatic? You know what I mean? So it's just one of those things that I think before the person we spoke to was a gentleman from Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Barbecue.
Lawrence Jr.
Thank you. And he said that really what the person was doing was just saying, are you comfortable? Is this okay with you? Are you consenting? And that's really all they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what it is like, it's someone who's omnipresent, always aware of that. Because I think it's very easy when you're on a film set and you're like in a position as a director on a small film set that you step away, you're spinning 13 different fucking plates. And little do you know that your actress is being creeped on by the male lead who doesn't understand when she is saying no, you know? And I think if any reason, like as a massive supporter of women in general, and I have friends, my friend Caitlin Newberry started a group where basically it's, if you have a bad experience with a photographer or anyone on a film set, leave their information here and it will be communicated. Like it's there for women across the Midwest, and it's because so many women have stories like this. Yeah. So I see the purpose of having an intimacy coordinator, even if you feel, even if you assume you think your actors are okay. Like I said, never assume anything. Like you still need to go in, and maybe you get the wrong person on the wrong day, and there's the wrong physical touch and it doesn't feel right, and all of a sudden you got a problem, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see that. Have y'all had any problems with sex scenes or nudity or anything like that on the set? Okay, no juicy stories to tell.
I have one. I feel like I've been talking so much, but like, I mean, I have a story. It's pretty. So I filmed a movie that was very sexually aggressive. And this is when I was, it was 2014. I was the size of a thimble. I was so small. And when I was asked to do a nude scene that I thought played really well into the film, in the script, I was like, fuck yeah. Like, this is the time. I look the part. And then they, like, you know, eventually got to filming. We filmed this entire movie, mind you. Whole thing got filmed. I have the scene where it's me and a bunch of models being held up in the middle of the woods. We're doing an erotic photo shoot with this, like, visionary photographer, and I'm the gay makeup artist who can also like kick ass. It was a great role. I loved it.
You were like Buffy.
I was like Buffy, only like significantly gayer with mutton chops. It was phenomenal. And so it gets down to this whole sequence where my character is like, because I try to stand up for one of the girls, he's humiliated and forced to strip down butt cheek naked. And I'm like, okay, I do it. So we do it. And then the director is like, hey, I think you should throw a cock ring on for the scene. And I was like, and I did it. But like in the moment I look back, I'm like, what? Like, and so I have a cock ring on in the scene. It does me favors. I'm not going to complain about it. But then I end up getting like killed because one of the killers changes mask out with every kill. And the kill for me was called the unicorn, which was a leather bondage mask with a 13-inch like jet black dildo extending off the top of it, wrapped in wire, and my character like full on got like deep throated to death with this thing, and so come the day that we film it, and I'm standing in the nude in the middle of like this like park area.
You weren't like, nude. You had on your cock ring.
I had on my cock ring, and they bring out the solution for this mask is they just cut a chunk of it off. But there's still like wire wrapped around it and everything. So I'm fake getting gagged out on this dildo for literally like probably 2 hours. I have never had so much saliva leave my body ever. I was dehydrated. I was
exhausted. Be honest. How long until you gave a real blowjob after that?
I feel like my throat fused over for 3 years. Like it was traumatizing. But the biggest insult to all of this injury, because it was not well handled, this was very indie. Lots of lessons were learned. People should have been sued. The movie never even got finished.
Oh wow.
It never got finished. Like, and like part of me is like, thank fucking God. But like the other part of me is like, God, but you know what? I got butt ass naked and deep throated to death in a movie only for it to turn around and I actually didn't die. It was a fake out. I survived the deep throating and I survived the movie. So I feel so fucking pissed off. I have so much revenge in me for this movie, but like, it's like, at least if you're gonna fucking do this kind of shit and put people through this nonsense, give them a finished fucking product.
Yeah, I think I would wake up in the middle of night, nightmares of this director that asked you to put the cock ring on, just rewinding your scene over and over again. And that's probably why he did it.
He's watching you right now. All the
time.
What a fucker. So pissed.
He's still watching it. That director thanked you.
Oh my God. Troy, are you going to be here in October for the pop-up market?
I am planning to, yes. Yes.
Nice. Okay. Are you excited? Now, when did you get involved with the Houston Horror Film Festival?
From the very start, yeah. I was there from the very start. Yeah, it was kind of my initial idea. I'm the one that actually came up with the Houston Horror Film Festival name and everything. And originally, my vision for it was just simply going to be a film festival. Because as a filmmaker, an indie filmmaker, I was traveling around the country to all these different film festivals that my films got accepted into. And I just thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I loved being able to network with other filmmakers. I made tons of friends. It's just awesome seeing your film screened in front of an audience. And oftentimes festival screenings are the only way that gets to happen for indie filmmakers, especially if you're making short films. I made features, but short filmmakers really never really get the opportunity for their films to screen in front of an audience. So I got back to Houston and realized there wasn't really a film festival in Houston that was solely focused on horror. So I came up with the Houston Horror Film Festival. I actually had a location for it. It was going to be in Katy at the Hilton Garden Inn out there. Super excited. It fell through. My mom got really sick. She ended up passing away from cancer. So I had to delay it. But I still wanted to do it. So I ended up meeting Tony Rodriguez, at Texas Frightmare Weekend. We had been social media friends for a long time. I knew that he was into horror. We finally met up and we hit it off right away. Became like super close friends. To this day, obviously, we're still super close friends. And it was just a night out in Montrose. One night with him, I just was like, "Hey, Tony, you want to start the Houston Horror Film Festival with me?" And that's kind of how it started.
So fantastic.
He came up with, "Yeah, we should probably get some celebrity guests, and that would draw in more people." So we had planned the whole first one back in 2020. Didn't happen, obviously, because of COVID. So we did a couple of the pop-up markets to get people excited, to kind of show them what we were capable of doing and what they could expect on a smaller scale. We also brought on Scott Vatna, who he was running his own little horror convention in Houston called the Scary Dad convention. Yes. Yeah, and so that's where we met.
That's right.
Yes. Yes, that's where we met him. He invited me and Tony to have a table at Scary Dad at their event to promote.
I think Dicey met you guys that day.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and that's kind of where our relationship with Scott happened, was from that experience. And now he is full-time with the Houston Horror Film Festival. We each have our specific roles. I like to say, and I'm just joking, because I obviously do not feel this way, but I always like to say I kind of get the bum end of the stick because people really don't get to see me over the course of the weekend. We have it broken up where Scott handles all the vendors, which is a huge undertaking. I could never do that. I would probably shoot myself. Tony deals with getting all of the guests. He's the one that reaches out to agents, decides which celebrity guests we're going to get, books them, takes care of all their travel plans, blah, blah, blah. I, on the other hand, take care of the film festival part of the Houston Horror Film Festival. So that's a year job because we open up submissions a year ahead of time and I find judges to watch the films. I watch all the films. They have to get rated. They have to selecting them, building the schedule, doing the awards. And then over the course of the weekend, I am in the screening room 95% of the time, running the films, stopping the films, doing the Q&A with the filmmakers that attend, hosting the award show. So that's my role in the festival. I'm perfectly fine with it. That's kind of what I wanted.
That's awesome. To be in the
first place. That is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know about Dicey, but as part of the media team and maybe for the future, whoever you choose for media, I think it's a good idea to send them the films ahead of time. Because I felt like we just didn't promote them enough and I really wanted to, but we were busy. We never stopped.
Yeah, the problem with, you know, some of the filmmakers, though, you know, these are films that are, you know, not out on platforms yet. So, you know, we always get asked, well, how can we watch these films? We didn't get to see them at the festival. We couldn't make it to see this specific one. And unfortunately, a lot of the times the answer is you really can't. You know, you might want to contact the filmmaker. If they put it up for public viewing, that's fine. Features, you know, I feel like filmmakers of feature films have a very specific goal with their festival run with their film, and it is to get laurels and get it attention so that they can attach to their media packet and find a good distributor and say, hey, look, this film played at all these festivals and it won Best Feature at the Houston Horror Film Festival and at, you know, Crimson Screen Fest and all these ones. So that's their goal. With short films, though, you know, I mean, there's not a platform really for distribution for short horror films. So a lot of those filmmakers are just making these short films to kind of showcase their talent as a filmmaker and see if they can get a budget for a bigger film. But yes, I totally agree. You know, promoting the films is definitely I think something we can work on next year as well. You know, getting
it was great this year. Were you guys shocked?
Yes.
Yeah, it was insane, right?
It was completely insane. The screening room was full the entire weekend. packed the entire weekend, which is awesome for filmmakers that are attending. We had filmmakers attend from all over the world. We had one flying from Italy, all over the country they came in. So we wanted to make sure that their film was screening in front of, it always sucks. I've been to festivals where I literally was the only person in the room when my film was screened. I remember I drove from Houston to Atlanta to attend a film festival there. And when my film screened, I was literally the only person in the entire screening room.
Oh, wow.
You don't want that. You don't want to be the festival that where that happens, because it falls back and it really looks bad on the festival. You know, my question was, what have you guys been doing to promote this festival? Why is nobody here? And it wasn't just my film. That was a common theme throughout the course of the weekend.
Well, you guys did such a great job. It ran so smoothly. Even the panels, most of the time you go somewhere and the panel schedules get thrown off a little bit because somebody's late or something. If anything was a hiccup, I never noticed. It just flowed amazing.
Yeah, I would have never known Roger wasn't supposed to host that panel. Like, you just seem like, okay, this is what's happening. You know, you were so comfortable.
Yeah.
If you can't tell, if there's one thing I fucking like, it's talking. So.
Yeah. Right into that.
Right. But if there's one thing I really love talking about, it really is horror. I think Troy knew to bring me onto the show just because, Troy was expanding on his love for horror earlier, but for me, it's horror has gotten me through so much shit. I have more emotions invested in horror than I do at probably any other topic in my life. It's so weird. My partner knows it. He's come to accept it. And he's someone who doesn't love horror, and I was like, you gotta give me my space and my fucking time, or I'll lose my mind, you know. So talking about those topics, I think, because we hosted the Scream Queen panel as well, and that was really fun. Yeah. Some of the dames that we got up on that stage, and by dames I do also include Mark Patton in that statement. It's people that I've grown up, like Terry. How many times have I seen her hanging off a goddamn meat hook? Fucking awesome that I get to share a moment with her. So I'm just going to ask her the things I fucking want to know, you know, with a little pizzazz.
Well, look, whatever you guys are involved in, you keep us in the loop. You keep us there. I want to be there. I want to be part of it. I don't care what it is at this point. If you need somebody to come stab somebody, you let me know. I want to.
She's got lots of anger. She'll stab a bunch of motherfuckers.
I love it. No, but honestly, one thing I think that was one of the reasons I responded instantly when I saw you gals reach out, is that we rarely get to go on female-based anything. And we rarely get to have females on our show. We've had my very good friend Caitlin Newbury, who, if you like independent horror, you're going to recognize who she is when you see her face. She's stunning. But we've had her on. We've had my best friend Teresa on, who has her own podcast. She's amazing. But overall, there's only there's a pocket of women who really delve into the genre, gay men do, at least. There's so many gay men. But finding women to come onto the show has been a focus for us. We really want that. So when you reached out to us, I was like, this is perfect.
Well, maybe when
to cross our paths.
Yeah, and maybe when you guys catch up and see Nope, we'll come back and talk to you guys. Talk with you guys about Nope.
I think you should come on the show. But I will say this, and Troy will stand by this: we like to have everyone individual because we want to get the full experience of that person. So we would have you both on separately. You guys have your spotlight, and you pick the movie that you feel defines your love for the genre the most.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, you tell me when. I'll be there.
We talk about for 2 hours, so buckle up.
That's fine.
Sometimes three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes
three.
I love to talk. I got a filmmaking question. Let's say that I have a part, and we're talking about independent, so there's a small budget. If you have a body that you need to burn, so do you need to change that in the script? Do you need to do CGI? Do you need to have some kind of pyrotechnic? How do you get across on a screen, something like that? I was going to ask that in your panel, Troy, but I was like, nah, I'll wait.
You know, I've never had to work with fire in any of my films, although one of my scripts that I was actually going to go into production with and everything, but never came to fruition, called Hollow Lake. There is a death scene that is by fire, and it's very brutal. It's one of those, it's that way of death they do in like Africa, where they put a rubber tire over your neck and douse it with gasoline and set it on fire. That's how one of the characters meets his demise in that film. And it's very brutal, and it's supposed to have a ton of emotional impact. I don't know. I would have had to have reached out and tried to figure out how you get that done. I'm assuming we'd just get a dummy that models the actor and just have a lot of get the fire department there. Maybe if they could come and pay them whatever to watch to make sure it wasn't going to get out of hand. I don't know. I've never worked with fire. I've worked with, you know, heads getting cut off, throats getting slit, dildos getting shoved in mouths, people getting hanging themselves from trees, giant candy canes getting shoved down throats, Roger getting a shovel, his head chopped in half with a shovel. But I've never worked with fire.
I've done two separate occasions with fire, and they were both learning curves. I'm going to say that, like, on an indie level, a lot of times with indie film in general, you just fucking roll with it. You try to plan it, but sometimes you just got to roll with it. And so one film, we were showing fire itself. And honestly, one thing I took away from this is less is more, because it turned out actually quite good. It's the finale of Mother Krampus 2 Sleigh Ride, in which the house is on fire. And all of that was done with lighting and smoke and a little bit of digital spark. Like, it really wasn't a lot, just enough. But it was the visual of the smoke filling this really eerie house, was picking up, you're getting particles of light coming in. And then it was the audio, the crackling of the wood, because there's an old wooden house. So that really, like, worked fine for me. Then I also did Rebirth, where we have a truck explosion, and we played around with miniatures and digital and CGI. And honestly, the miniatures turned out great. I wish we would have used them a little bit more, because look, I think we were scared of it, but watching it on the big screen, I was like, I'm so proud that we did that. We literally composited the miniatures into the actual sequence, and the truck explodes. And I think cool. That anytime you can do something like that to push your boundaries, it'll pay off. You know, I try to avoid CGI though with things like that. I wish we didn't have to go that route considering the footage, but it was kind of like what we were left with. And it was like I said, it was a learning curve.
Gotcha. Roger, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask Roger about, you mentioned, you know, you got to have that horror, or, you know, like, I need my time. You're going to have to give me my time with horror. What's your go-to? Is it a particular movie that you have to watch? That's what gets you to the comfort place you need to be in?
That's a fun question. I like how you worded that. And I know Troy will have like an answer like this as well, because I have a few movies that I'm going to use this example. If I'm bringing someone into my life and I'm like, we have to sit down and watch a horror movie together, it's going to be one of these. House of the Devil by Ty West. The Invitation is one of my favorites of the last, I would say, 10 years. I love slow burn suspense, like slow burn suspense. It's just, I don't know. It moves me. It creeps me the fuck out. And this movie masters it. And then probably like a movie like the Sorority Row sequel. Like something like that, like popcorn-y, that I know if someone can appreciate that. Black Christmas, the remake. I'm sorry, I said sequel. Sorority Row remake. And the Black Christmas remake, which, like, I know it's not like the best movie ever, but my God, is it fucking fun. So if it's something like that, if I can watch that with people, that repeatability factor. What about you, Troy?
All right. So are we talking about somebody that just has never watched horror films and you're trying to get them into the genre?
No, I think you're trying to become friends with this person. You're like, I know you like horror, but do you like this horror?
That's a tough one. I mean, I would say, you know, I'm going to go old school with a lot of the stuff that I grew up with that I think, I mean, if people watch these films and they have an appreciation for them, you can pretty much show them anything. The film that got me, hooked me as a horror fan, was Poltergeist. And I think that's such an accessible film for a non-horror fan. Even to this day, it's super effective. The effects and everything stand up to this day. You know, I would, gosh, and I'm like, I mean, My flavor of horror, and Roger knows this very well. I am a huge slasher fan. And I would say 98% of my horror knowledge is of slasher films. I'm not that well versed on zombie films. I'm not that well versed on vampire films. I'm not that well versed on a lot of that stuff. Slasher films are my go-to. So, you know, showing someone something like the original Black Christmas, even something like Sleepaway Camp. I think if someone that's never seen horror can watch Sleepaway Camp and kind of leave the movie with, you know, some strong opinions, then that's probably a good thing. You're going to hook them and be able to show them subsequent slasher films that were influenced by that one. But yeah, my favorites are all of the 80s slashers.
What do you think about Art the Clown? Like, I don't hear enough about Terrifier. We hear about, like,
Well, you know what? So me and Roger covered Terrifier on our Patreon episode, and there is a reason. There is a reason why we did it on the Patreon episode. I don't know how. I'll just say, how do I phrase? I know that the filmmakers, particularly the lead actor, is very. What's the word I'm looking for, Roger? He's very defensive.
Impassioned.
Impassioned. About any criticism of his film. I understand it, but he goes to the point where I think it's a little excessive and a little off-putting. When you put something out there, not everyone's going to appreciate it. We share our thoughts about Terrifier pretty honestly in the Patreon episode. But again, it's behind the Patreon wall for a reason. Because honestly, I am not as enthusiastic about it as a lot of people seem to be. I tend to lean towards the belief that it's a little bit misogynistic.
I agree with that.
it makes one of the biggest unforgivable mistakes a slasher movie could make, and that is it allows the villain to kill the main, who you think is going to be the final girl, with a fucking gun.
She was such a good character, and I felt like, I understand the idea of a slasher wanting to, like, play with your feelings and toy you around, and, you know, right when you think one thing, then all of a sudden they're going to surprise you with something different. But I like very much aspects of the film, but overall, it did feel kind of torture porny to me. And I look for story. I do prefer substance over gratuitous violence. I like give me a good fucking kill, but have a purpose behind it, I think. And I think it started to stray away from its purpose a little bit. But that's my personal thing. And that's why I'd prefer to sit down and watch a movie like The Final Girls, which is pretty void of gore for the most part, but has a phenomenal, like, cast that you're rooting for. Like, I want, me as a gay man, I'm gonna say it right now, the reason I fell into loving the genre is having underdog characters I could root for. And it's often portrayed in the form of a strong woman. And I've said this time and time again, and Troy has too. I have so many iconic women of the genre that I cherish and celebrate. And so when you see one treated so in such a disposable manner, for me it left a bad taste in my mouth. No matter how you try to excuse it, I want to care more. And now you're just making these individuals so disposable. So I don't know. I didn't feel attached to it. I would like to.
Okay. I saw the misogyny as part of the horror. Like I recognized it, and it was very torture. It was all gruesome and all that. I guess I kind of see slasher as that way. I lean more towards psychological horror because of that. In terms of gruesomeness and just one scene after another of just death and mayhem, I was like, okay. But I guess that would explain how come I don't see a lot of people talking about it then.
I think it definitely has its fan base. The sequel raised a ridiculous amount of money on Indiegogo, I believe like almost $200,000. There are people that are definitely very passionate about Terrifier and Art the Clown. I understand Art the Clown is a creepy ass villain. David Howard Thornton, who plays him, is incredible. It's nothing against him at all. His performance, that it is very unsettling. Probably one of the more unsettling villains we've gotten in a long time. I'm strictly talking about specific choices plot-wise that were made in the film that I just felt was a cheat. And when you have a character, a strong female character like the lead was being set up to be, and she kicks ass and she is getting the best of him, she's fighting back with her all, and you're like, yeah, you get him, bitch, and she's going and going and going, and then all of a sudden he pulls out a gun and fucking shoots her. Come on. No, yeah. No, that's the biggest mistake you can make. That'd be like Michael. That'd be like at the climax of Halloween when Laurie is, you know, fighting Michael Myers and she's hiding in the closet and it sticks the wire hanger in his eye, you know, and he pulls out a gun and shoots her. Come on.
Yeah, I get it.
Chantel, I think I interrupted a second ago.
Oh, I don't even remember what I was going to say.
I went down Art and all that.
Oh, maybe I was going to ask Roger, are you coming back to Houston for October? Are you going to be here next year for the big one?
I won't be coming back for October. I'm actually filming Meet in October. Okay. So okay. I'm very much like in that. It's exhausting in every fucking way. But I will be back for the next one, I believe, right, Troy?
Is that all right? Correct? That means we're partying. We're all together.
Yeah, you'll be back. You'll be back. We're working on dates as we speak. So we just gotta have to
solidify. We'll be there in some way or another. We have to be there in some way.
Oh yeah. You will.
Yeah. No, and now that this is my first time at the Houston Horror Film Festival, to be honest. So like I knew some people from social media, but even though I'm so fucking loud on a microphone, I am so socially awkward, like in conversation. I think you get that with a lot of people who are stage presences, you know. But like I have no idea how to fucking talk to people. I'm like, I can't even hold a conversation.
Seem weird at all. You did not seem awkward at all. Thank you.
That's how I feel though. So I'm so happy. Like now I know people. I'm gonna come back in full motherfucking force. I can't wait. It's gonna be so fun.
Well, whatever happens, if either of us have to have dinner with strangers, we should go with one another so that way we can at least laugh at each other's jokes. Because everybody else just looks at you. You're like, wasn't that funny to you? Like, I'm being really, okay.
Now we have a little army.
There were wedding guests in there in the hotel that weekend. I was like, oh, they picked the wrong weekend to be here. I know they are like, what is going on? What the fuck is this?
Or if they're fun, yeah. They're like, fuck yeah. This is exactly what I wanted. Get photos.
On Saturday night, I don't know if you guys saw me, but I brought the 80s goth to the party. I was like Susie'd out. So I was freaking some people out when I was walking through that hotel.
You gotta go all out though if you're gonna do that shit. I'm so mad I didn't bring like a costume or something.
Yeah,
Troy and I are gonna come as the Shining Girls or something. I already told them.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Oh, so, that was great. Yeah. I tried on my little nurse outfit, you know, to go like Carmella from Halloween.
Yeah.
I couldn't fit it. The last time I wore it was like 2017. It was embarrassing how much it did not fit. And I was like,
I think she could have made it work.
You and me both. I put on 100 pounds through COVID. So I'm like, woo, nothing's fitting right now. Only sweatpants. So.
Well, I think we've held you for about an hour.
Yes.
And I feel
I'm
like
so happy we did this.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk for another 3 hours, but y'all won't like us anymore. You wouldn't be back. So
that's not true at all. No, I'm so happy that we did this. And like honestly, now we have to have you on Dark Knight of the podcast. Yeah. But like I said, one at a time, so you get a proper spotlight moment in the sense of like, I want to know what movie you fucking love. You know?
Yeah. Start thinking about what film you want to cover, and
okay. We'll go there. Sounds great.
We're going in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
I know, Roger, you film. Is there anything else y'all want to plug? I know me.
No.
Just listen to Dark Knight of the podcast. We think we're pretty hilarious. We might not be, but we like to think we are.
No, y'all are. Y'all really are.
You are. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like I said, the Meet Indiegogo is active right now. By all means, give it a look. But also, you can follow me at The Scream Queer on Instagram, on Twitter. You know, all the basics, the Scream Queer,
The original.
I'll go out on a high note. Tony's pretty hot.
Oh my God. Listen, I was so in my mind. I was like, Troy knows I say all the time. I'm like, this is not in a creepy way or anything, but Tony, you're saying Troy or Tony?
Tony.
I say to him all the time, I'm like, Tony is the single just most beautiful man I've ever seen. And it's hauntingly beautiful. He's so pretty.
But you never see him at the con. This is what you see, his hat and his phone.
I love him.
Is always busy. Yeah.
I see the perfectly trimmed facial hair he has right here.
Yeah. There you go.
And I also have to say, he's so beautiful, you know he'd be beautiful in drag. Like, I can't even imagine how stunning he would be. But either way, I mean, hauntingly beautiful. I tell Troy all the time.
I keep a professional when I see him, but that's what I'd be thinking of here.
Oh my God, Troy's going to be like... Get on this fucking podcast. Roger is rambling about your beauty.
I'm sure.
In the friendliest way possible. I mean it.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much.
Oh, all right,
thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Good night.
Have a great night.
All right.
Night. Bye.